Well met, and welcome to episode 78 of the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for June 15th, 2014. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings, this is Bill Walthall, and this week we'll talk a little bit about what I did, bard-wise at least, while on my three-year sabbatical from the project. Okay, if you've been reading the blog the last couple of weeks, you know I'm easing back into this project thing. The Merry Wives of Windsor has been causing some minor cramps in my ever-loving Shakespeare reading muscles, so let me take a continued break from my reading to what I've been looking at for the past few years. Live, the only production I've seen was a magnificent Henry V from the Folger Library and Theater in Washington, D.C. back in February of 2013. We were there to watch my older son swim in his college conference championships, and I took the opportunity to hit up the Folger. It was a bare-bones production, directed by Robert Richman, with a small cast, just 13 actors, which created some great doubling of roles. For example, Katie Dubois played not only Catherine of France, but the boy as well. And another actor played the chorus, Montjoy, and the mayor of Harfleur. Great use of lighting and onstage music, and a kick-ass Henry, played by Zach Appleman. It was the most impressive live performance I've seen in a while, stronger than the Hamlet I saw at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival back in the summer of 2011, and the Henry V that I saw there back in 1989. In some ways, I think it was better than the Ian McKellen Richard III that I saw at UCLA in 92, and I think it rivals the first Shakespeare I ever saw, The Tempest, with Anthony Hopkins at the Mark Taper Forum in LA in 1979. Of course, the magic of that production may be nostalgia just in my head. On the small screen, I saw a truly great Macbeth with Patrick Stewart a few years back. I don't want to spoil it and discuss it before we hit that play in just over a year and a half, but suffice to say, it's brilliant, bloody, and bloody scary. Also on the list of no, can't discuss it before its designated month are two, count them two, versions of Much Ado About Nothing. Lucky for me, that's just a couple of months off, and I can wait. But as a preview, we've got Joss Whedon's black and white relatively indie take, relatively at least in comparison to the film he did before that one, a little flick we call The Avengers. And I also saw a filmed version of a production done in London in the summer of 2011, starring David Tennant and Catherine Tate as the bickering lovers Benedict and Beatrice. What, you say? Who cares, you say? Then you must not be a fan of Doctor Who, the long-running British television drama. Tennant was famously the 10th incarnation of the Doctor, I'd say 11th if you count the War Doctor, and 11th and 12th if you count the War Doctor in Tennant's own hand, but that might be too arcane even for any Whovians in our listening audience. Anyway, Tennant was the Doctor, and Tate was one of his companions, Donna Noble. The two reunited on stage for This Much Ado, and it's a blast, but more on that in a couple of months. But speaking of Doctor Who, sorry, I couldn't leave this behind. The show follows the Doctor, an alien from the planet Gallifrey, as he travels in his TARDIS, time and relative dimension in space, a combo spaceship and time machine. So, he travels through time. Well, guess who Tennant's 10th Doctor meets in an episode from 2007? Well, Will Shakespeare, of course. In an episode called The Shakespeare Code, written by Gareth Roberts, the 10th Doctor and Martha Jones, his newest traveling companion, this is just her second adventure, go to London in 1599. There they encounter the bard, three witches from another planet, and the real reason why the newly constructed Globe Theater has 14 interior sides. At the beginning of the episode, we see the ending of a performance of Love's Labour's Lost, and there is a Love's Labour's Won, only by the end of the episode that has been lost to history. In between, we get a series of running gags about how our language is filled with Shakespearean references and how Shakespeare himself would respond when he hears them.
All the world's a stage.
I might use that.
Of course, when the Doctor quotes Dylan Thomas, Shakespeare likes that too.
But what could have scared her so? She had such enormous spirit.
Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
I might use that.
You can't, it's someone else's.
When they learn they're battling witches, Martha, played by Freema Agyeman, expects Will to know all about them.
You're accusing me?
No, but I saw a witch, big as you like, flying, cackling away, and you've written about witches.
I have? When was that?
Not quite yet.
But the Doctor has to remind her that not yet he hasn't. Later, Will talks about his battle with mental illness when he lost his son.
My only boy. The Black Death took him. I wasn't even there.
I didn't know, I'm sorry.
Let me question everything. The futility of this fleeting existence, to be or not to be. Oh, that's quite good.
You should write that down.
Maybe not. A bit pretentious. Mm.
Then later, Shakespeare flirts with both Martha and the Doctor.
Where women can be doctors, writers, actors.
This country's ruled by a woman.
Ah, she's royal, that's God's business. Though you are a royal beauty.
Whoa, Nelly. I know for a fact you've got a wife in the country.
But Martha, this is town.
Come on, we can have a good flirt later.
That a promise, Doctor?
Oh, 57 academics just punched the air. Now move!
This references the debate over the bard's sexuality. And finally, when the Doctor uncovers the plot by the witches.
That's it. They used you. They gave you the final words, like a spell, like a code. Love's labor's won, it's a weapon. The right combination of words spoken in the right place with the shape of the globe is an energy converter. The play's the thing. And yes, you can have that.
By the end, Will has appropriated the name of another race of aliens, the Sycorax, and we know that he'll use that in his final play, The Tempest. We also learn that Martha, who is black, may very well be the Dark Lady of the Sonnets. The whole episode is a great, smart, witty romp. Now on the big screen, I've avoided, thus far, Anonymous, the Roland Emmerich's conspiracy flick about the authorship question. I had been excited about the prospect of Hayley Stansfield starring in Romeo and Juliet, since I had loved her in True Grit, but when I heard that they had lost the original language, I lost interest and haven't gotten around to seeing it. I did see, however, two staged productions that had been broadcast to American cinemas by their theater companies in the UK. The Comedy of Errors from the National Theatre Live in 2012, and the first part of Henry IV from the Royal Shakespeare Company just last week. This production of the Comedy of Errors makes Ephesus look a whole lot like modern London, and makes the Antipholi and the Dromios West African immigrants. This switch, overseen by director Dominic Cook, works wonderfully, layering social commentary onto the slapstick without losing any of the fun. I wish I could say the same about Henry 4-1. This current RSC production has Anthony Scher as Falstaff. Scher, who is regarded as having done one of the greatest Richard III's of all time back in 84, does not disappoint. His Falstaff is great. And the Hal is good, but the less I say about Hotspur, the better. Suffice to say, here he comes off like a psychopath with arrested development. It's not an interpretation that I liked. And I blame the director, Gregory Doran, for this, as well as for the overly reverent staging. I had a student once, Scott Worby, where are you? That used the term museum theater, and that's what this was. Dust-free, hermetically sealed, vacuum-packed with all the air and life sucked out of it. But even after that experience, I love the opportunity to see these productions. The Stratford Shakespeare Festival will be releasing their recent 12th Night with Brian Dennehy to cinemas later this year, as will the RSC with both Two Gents and Love's Labor's Lost. So that's what I've been doing, viewing-wise, and now I've got to dive back into the text of Merry Wives, since I burned daylight. So see ya. If you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespearean news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again for our next podcast. We hope to see you then. Been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for June 15th, 2014. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.